Last week we had just started talking about Jesus going in and overturning the tables and being in the temple, and talked about
his
righteous
anger in that moment. We also we had just gotten to Mark chapter 11, if you want to turn there with me, where we had specific groups of people that were asking or had approached Jesus, and they had asked a couple questions. They're in Mark chapter 11, verses 27 and 28. It says, "Then they came again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders came to him, and they said to him, 'By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you the authority to do these things?'" So it seems like we have a couple questions that they're asking him here. And I'm just curious, I want to open this up to start things off. Are those two different questions, or are they really one of the same? By what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you the authority to do these things? Is that the same question? Okay.
Somebody can claim to have certain authority, but not really have been given that authority.
Okay. Yeah.
I know of a person who was claimed to be an evangelist, and there was never any authority given.
Okay.
Just an example.
Okay. Well, why do you think they asked Christ these two questions? Was there an angle on asking in their minds two different questions? Okay.
But they also could have genuinely wanted to know.
Yeah. Okay. And so I tend to think they are two different questions, but I think to your point, that's what I had down is and I've got this whole, you know, they're always to try to trap him, try to trip him up, try to trap him, try to back him into a corner. And as we know, that didn't work. It's kind of interesting. What was typically his approach when he got a question that he knew was a trap? Or that was the point. Okay, ask another question. Usually ask a question that, what, could they answer? Typically not, or didn't have a good answer. This is not much different here, but, Jesus clearly had a mission that he was on, that he had to accomplish, and that authority was given to him by the Father. And did he have authority on his own? Yes. Did he have authority given by his Father? Yes. So, I mean, he had many a ways he could have answered this, and he could have approached this in a variety of ways. He also had the Holy Spirit. I mean, he could have gone into a lot of things. But, it's interesting. Matthew and Mark have very specific thoughts. They have, like, one question while here, and then in Luke's account, and we're going to look at that. If we go to Luke 20 and 3... Luke 20 and 3, "But he answered and said to them, I will all..." And so this is just following the same thing. So there in verse 2 it says, "Tell us by what authority you're doing these things and who gave you the authority." So he says, "But he answered and said to them, I will also ask you one thing and answer me." And then he does exactly what Emily said. So he approaches their question with a question, and that is, so you answer me this one thing. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or was it from men? Now, why do you think he asked them this question? Why this question? How is it pertinent at this time?
I wonder if he was just doing to them what they were trying to do to him. They were trying to trick him, put him into a compromised situation. And so he just did the same thing to them. He asked them a question that they didn't want to answer because either way it would be a poor outcome.
Okay, I agree. I mean, they don't have a good response here, regardless of how they go. But you know, was he really in a bad spot though? I mean, could he have answered that question? And if he did answer the question, what would have probably happened? What was probably the outcome of the answer that they were hoping he would answer? And then what would have ensued from that?
Well, they were hoping.
Yeah, and so then if he did answer that way, what then? What were they going to do?
Yeah, they would have, you know, continued on with, you know, well, what makes you so special?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What makes you so special? And probably a blasphemous, you know, thing that, okay, so now you say that, well, you know, because you're owning up to this, and we're going to have to throw you in jail or what, you know, whatever. But, you know, he certainly had the authority. He certainly could have answered that question. And, of course, so here he asked them a question. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting back and forth. And I don't want to make a big deal about it, but I do think that we have examples of him doing this exact same thing in other, you know, places where these religious leaders, if you will, would ask him a question, and then he would come back with them. You know, what had happened, though, just prior to this? So he goes in and he clears out the money changers from the temple, and you know, the elders and the teachers of law, the chief priests, they no doubt at that time felt like they were the ones that had the authority. And so you think about what had just happened in this moment. So again, we're talking about the week leading up to his death, and he goes into a scenario where they think they're in charge. They think they're the ones that have the power. And what's he do? He shows them that no, he really is the one in authority and has power, and causes them kind of a problem. So, you know, this poses an issue for them. So probably out of embarrassment, you might say, they had these questions. But, you know, they were clearly trying to set a trap for him, question his authority. And, you know, if he had said, my authority is from God, I think they would have come out, you know, and they would have accused him of blasphemy, you know. And they would probably put him through trial and everything else, which that was coming anyway. And he knew that, that in short order that was going to happen, but not at this moment or this time. See if he'd go that way. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if that might have been the thinking, you know, we didn't authorize this. What are you doing?
Could have been. You know, again, them thinking that they were the ones in charge and in power. Maybe they wanted to see if he would go that route. And yeah, it's difficult to know at that time, obviously, what their real motive was. But we know that clearly they were concerned with their own authority and their own power and what this would look like, you know, to the people. Because how? What do you do from there now? Here this guy comes in and does this, and who do you think you are? Where did you get this authority and power? You know, we're in charge.
Didn't ask
us. Yeah, exactly. You didn't get this approved through us. Okay, good. And again, you know, we talked about this last week, but, you know, rather than the truth, I mean, really getting to the bottom of what is the truth, what were these leaders really interested in? Well, they were interested, back to your point, Larry, their own authority, you know, their own power. They were concerned about, you know, their own situation. And again, you know, Jesus was undermining their authority here. I mean, he's causing problems. So, you know, you think about it modern day, and I don't know what scenario we would use, but if we came in and asserted ourselves this way and someone thought they were in charge and you showed them otherwise, it would be a problem, you know. So, again, I think, to Karen's point, I think they were legitimate questions. Maybe they really did want to know. They didn't really want to know, but I think they, you know, it was a legitimate question. But, again, here they are scrambling, if you will, to discredit him, and which they had done many times before. And they wanted to get him, you know, out of the equation. They wanted to remove him from the situation. So he asked them his questions. John's baptism, was it from heaven or was it from men? Of course, you know, if they said heaven, then they knew it'd be turned against them because they didn't even believe, right? So now where do you go from there? So how do, you know, no matter what, how do they answer? And if they had answered, well, his baptism is from men, well, what was the problem with that? What's the problem with him answering that the authority was from men?
People believe that John was the problem.
There you go. So No matter what, they've got an issue here. Let's see here. In verse 32, is that where I wanted to go? No. Let me see. Let me back up here. Why did I have 32 down? No. I don't know. I had the wrong verse here. Okay. Well, in Matthew 21, you know, Matthew records the answer as, we are afraid of the people. And so, in, you know, at the end of the day, that's what was going on here. Luke gets more to the heart of their true fear. Luke 20:6 says, but if we say from men, all the people will stone us, for they are persuaded that John was a prophet. So exactly what Ben just said. But that was the answer. I mean, that was going to be the issue with that answer is, you know, they really were afraid of the people and couldn't go that route either. So think about the tight spot that they're in. And here they were wanting an answer and now they can't even really give him an answer. So these leaders are in a position where they can't respond. You know, the people did believe in the authority of heaven. But here, again, like I said, your leaders can't answer this. You know, the other thing that we want to go back to, and I know we've mentioned this a couple times, but think about the irony that the people here, the priests, the teachers, the elders, feared most. Think about what they really feared at this time, this week, what they feared most, and what was going on. You know, this adherence, I guess, to heavenly authority is one thing that you could be thinking about. And here we have the very same people that 3 days from this very time, you know, here they've got one claim, but in one short week, they're going to be doing the very opposite thing. And that's going to be chanting, crucify him. And so you think about how quickly that happened. And I think that's something for us to really keep in mind here is that, you know, I was trying to make application to our lives today. We can be very strong for God, and it's easy to be strong for him here while we're in the church and we're with our brothers and sisters. And just as we leave these doors, become weak. And here we've got these people that we're following and saying and doing what, you know, seemed to be at the time the right things. I mean, they were following him from place to place. Think about that. They're following him. They were believers. They had believed that John the Baptist, of course, was a prophet. You know, we had that going on. And yet, these are the very people that, in short order, are going to be asking him to be crucified. So, very interesting, I guess, change of events, just all in a very, very short order. Anybody have any comments about that before we transition?
One thing I always think is interesting, and I think this is a true statement.
Mm-hmm.
We don't ever read about these people like denying what Jesus did. They just try to undermine what he did. To me, that's evidence that, you know, like Jesus really was doing all these signs and miracles, and everybody knew it, and so they didn't waste their time trying to say that he didn't do those things. They just tried, like here, to try to undermine his authority.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, there's a difference. Yep. They didn't deny it. They were just trying to undermine it. Okay, anything else? Okay, well, here again, we've got the silence of them not answering the question. They weren't really interested in the truth, which I think is the point there. And back to the original point, and that is they really asked the question just to trap him, just to put him in a tough spot. We know that, and leading up into this time, Jesus was teaching in stories. We talked about that. And he had confronted the Jewish leaders. We have the parable of the two sons. And let's just turn and look at that real quick. Matthew chapter 21. And maybe I'll have somebody make just a couple quick comments and then we'll move through these quickly. But here in Matthew 21, we have verses 28 through 32. But what do you think? A man had two sons and he came to the first and said, "Son, go, work today in my vineyard." He answered and said, "I will not." But afterward, he regretted it and went. Then he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father? They said to him, the first. Jesus said to them, assuredly I say to you that the tax collectors and harlots enter the kingdom of God before you. For John came to you in the way of the righteousness, and you do not believe him. But tax collectors and harlots believe him. And when you saw it, you did not afterward relent and believe in him. So what is being taught here, and just in a high-level overview, I know we've got a whole lesson we could go through, but what's being really said here in this teaching?
Well, one thing is actions speak louder than words. It's what you do, not what you say.
Okay, good point. It's a great point. Anything else? Yes.
So when it says, when he asked a question, the first they answered, not his disciples.
Yeah, you mean the first, what he said, what do you think?
So, right, and when it says they answered, they is the chief priests and the elders.
Verse 23, he came to the temple, the chief priests and the elders.
Yeah, yeah. He's still talking to those leaders.
So he's making a point to them.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, and this is. Exactly. Yeah. So he's driving the point home. And then, you know, we've got the parable of the wicked tenants, if you would, and that's what, you know, you could title it, but that's in Matthew. We can go a little further down, but that's in Matthew 21:33 through 46. We can read that. You've got the parable of the wedding feast. You know, all of these things were happening around this time. And, you know, let's just go to the wedding feast. So here in 22, and then that's just back a little bit, 1 through 14. We don't have to read the whole, we don't have to read this, but what was Jesus trying to make clear in this parable? And I'll just start with one simple point, but, you know, regardless of who we are, or what your situation is, you have to be prepared for the kingdom of heaven. That's one, I mean, that's just one major point that we can make. What else was about that wedding feast?
I'm looking at verse 11 where the man comes in without his wedding garment. I mean, that's pretty simple that we have to be ready to approach God, to be in his presence, and if we're not, we'll be thrown out.
Okay. Exactly. That's a good point.
The king had made preparations, and those who invited basically ignored it. That doesn't happen too often. Usually if the king invites you somewhere,
yeah,
you're looking to go.
Yeah. And who would he maybe have been speaking specifically to there that was invited that ignored? What group of people? You know?
The Jews.
The Jews. Yeah. So the Jews had done this to him. And so what was his solution to that, group of people in this wedding feast? Say, who, then let's go invite others. Let's go get others. And so that could be making the point to us as Gentiles. And, you know, there were others who were invited and accepted, but there was, you know, one who attempted, as Tad made the point, and even though he made the attempt to be there, he wasn't prepared. And that didn't bode well. And then verse 14, then the blind and lame came to him in the temple and he healed them. Oh, hold on a minute. Yeah, for many are called, but few are chosen. And, you know, we know that invite has gone to all mankind, but it's not going to have the impact that he had hoped for. Okay, and then... you know, do you think the people here knew, especially, I guess, these leaders, because to Karen's point, who is he really talking to? Who is he asking these questions of? And again, it was the leaders of the day. But do you think they understood what Christ truly was referring to? You think they got it? Yeah, Kevin shook his head no. You know, I think we look back at the end of Matthew chapter 21. I would tend to think that... you know, that there would be a reaction at the end of the parable that there'd be a reaction from the crowd. We don't really get that. I think, though, that in the parable of the wicked tenants, I think that, I think those people did probably, they knew who he was referring to, I think. When you go through that, you think, you're sitting there reading this and you're thinking, are they just ignoring this or are they just choosing to not understand? I think we've all had the conversation with our kids and we know that they get it, but they're acting as if they don't understand. And I think that was what was happening here a lot. You're only going to understand what you want to understand. And whether they truly got it or not, the stories were there and they were all listening. And especially those who should have gotten it, the leaders and the chief elders and the priests, they should have, but they didn't seem to. Let's see here. So we've got, then we can go down, and I was thinking about all these questions that he was being asked and all these things that were happening. We had the religious leaders, they were questioning Jesus about paying taxes. We can, there in Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 through 22, and Mark and Luke, we have the same thing. But, they had all of these questions, and so they asked him about the paying taxes, and we see them, continue to ask him a bunch of questions there in this chapter. Each time we see Jesus being questioned, to me, there's a common motive, and we uncovered that, but we could go through question after question, but at the end of the day, and we'll just end in Matthew, or let's go to Luke chapter 20, let's go back to there. Luke 20 and verses 19 and 20 says, "And the chief priests and the scribes that very hour sought to lay hands on him, but they feared the people, for they knew that he had spoken the parable against them. So they watched him and sent spies who pretended to be righteous that they might seize on his words in order to deliver him to the power and the authority of the governor." So again, not only do we get the motive there, but he also says that, they knew that he was speaking the parables against him. So the very things that he was talking about spoke directly about them or to them. And so you know they had to get it. Again, they may not have fully understood it, but they understood enough to know that he's talking about us. He's speaking to us. So what did they do? They wanted to lay hands on him. They wanted to, get rid of him. They wanted to throw him in jail, whatever they wanted to do. But what did they fear? They feared the people. And so we've got a very good passage here that kind of lets us know what was going on in their minds. And so they even go to the point of they're so concerned about these people that they send spies to do what? Pretend that they were righteous. So they've got people even setting in and pretending to be righteous that they might... My New King James says, "seize on his words." Does anybody have the NIV or ESV there in verse 20? What does it say that those righteous people went to do?
To catch Jesus.
Okay, just to catch him. Okay. Catch him and deliver him to the power and authority. So, here we are. The closer we get to the cross, the more the pressure gets turned up here. And as you know, we're right here, like I said, we're now days before, and they're getting a little more brazen. They're getting a little more angry. They're getting a little bit more watchful, and they're doing everything they can to put him away.
Like,
yes?
So, back in Matthew 22, one of the questions they ask him is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess the question is, what's the trap here? So if the answer is no, it's not lawful to pay to Caesar, then the Pharisees are going to say that he's rebellious
against the laws. Yeah.
And if he says, yes, it's lawful to pay taxes to Caesar, what's the...
The problem with him answering that way?
What would be the issue with him saying yes?
I was just thinking about this like 2 days ago when this first came to mind. I saw some statistic online that...
How many people don't pay their taxes?
No, it was about how much taxpayer money goes to fund, you know, evil things, really genuinely evil things. I was thinking, wow, you know, at what point does a Christian not pay their taxes? And then I thought of this verse. I thought, what Jesus says, it's the government's money anyway.
Yeah.
Give it back to the government, it's theirs anyway. So I guess maybe that's the trick, is the Jews were paying taxes to Rome. The Rome was incredibly wicked.
Yeah.
They were funding all kinds of wicked things. So Jesus says, it's their money anyway, just give it to them.
Okay, yeah. Just, it's more entrapment. I mean, it's a good point. And it'd be easy for them, like you said, to think, well, hey, I'm not going to fund these evil things. And so I'm just going to choose not to do that. And he takes a real easy approach to that, if there's any way. So.
It's valuable to note, I mean, they're turning up the heat on Jesus. But this is right after he's come into the city with the great praise.
That's right.
I assume you did that last week.
We did, yeah.
Fairly recently.
Yeah.
And so as they had seen that, this is quite possibly a reaction to that, as they've seen all the glory given to him.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. And that's the exact point we made, is just think about within this week, or, you know, just days before, you've got alms being cut. You've got, you know, everything being rolled out for him. And he rides in, you know, with all the glitz and glamour that he should have. And then right here.
But it's not the leaders that were necessarily.
No. That's right. Oh, sure. Well, yeah, and that's the problem is that these people are seeing their own authority, their own positions, their own power potentially being a problem. You know, they see this shift, this change in tide going the wrong way. And so they have a lot in their minds to be concerned about. And so they've got to do everything they can. So they've even gone to the point of, let's hire some spies, and then I need you to act religious and jump in there and make sure you see what he's doing. Let's find out what he's doing, because we want to lay hands on him. We want to put him away. Where did I leave off? Matthew chapter 22. And so here we have the leaders questioning Jesus about the resurrection. So Matthew 22, let's see, verses 23 through 33. I know it's a little bit long. The same day, the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to him and asked him, saying, "Teacher, Moses said that if a man dies having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up offspring for his brother. Now there were with us 7 brothers. The first died after he had married, and having no offspring, left his wife to his brother. Likewise, the second also, and the third even to the seventh. And last of all, the woman died also. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife of the 7 will she be? For they all had her." Jesus answered and said to them, "You are mistaken, not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven. But concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, 'I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living.' And when the multitudes heard this, they were astonished at his teaching." So here we have the opposite of what he'd kind of done before, which is answer a question with a question. But this time, he gets asked and he just comes right out with an answer. And his answer is to really put them in their place and tells them, "You really don't even know. You don't know what you're talking about. You know that you don't know the Scriptures." And he sets them straight there in verse 32. "I'm the God of these important, these people that you thought were important, and I'm the God of the living, not the dead." And so, pretty important point here. But as, again, back to your point, Kevin, as these multitudes of people, as all these followers were following him, they were astonished. It's an important thing. But again, this was a conflict that was continuing to arise. And, of course, you have the Sadducees here specifically, trying to ask him this question. And, you can see the scenario they're laying out for him. You know, you've got this scenario where if a man dies and his wife raises up, you know, trying to ask them these silly, you know, complex questions that they're just really trying to derail him, you know, and just set a trap for him. Any thoughts about that passage there or his answer to them? Okay. What was the real answer that they were trying to get to here? Why was the Sadducees even asking this question? Or maybe what I should say is, what was the real question they were trying to get to?
They didn't believe in the resurrection. So they were trying to use things that happened here on earth to make the resurrection seem implausible.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does this work?
Right, yeah. So trying to tie these two things together. And why didn't they believe in the resurrection? Well, I mean, what's at the base reason for them? I mean, obviously they didn't, but what were some of the reasons they didn't believe in the resurrection?
Well, I think the Sadducees just didn't believe in
Oh, okay.
That
could be. That, wasn't it also, and I'm just going off memory, but did they not believe, and maybe I read this and I'm just trying to think back, but they didn't believe in like the first five books, the Pentateuch, and so then since they didn't believe in those first five books, then they missed the whole point? Maybe not. I'll double check that, but I think there were multiple reasons, and Ben, you might be onto something with the Sadducees there as well, but they just didn't accept it. They didn't accept and they didn't believe it. And then of course here in 29 through 33, verse 33, it says, the crowds were astonished, the multitudes were astonished at his teaching. And in Luke, back in Luke, and I've kind of gone back and forth there, I should have held my place, but yeah, go ahead.
Before you get too far from verse 22, I really like verse 34.
Yes,
because you know there was some conflict between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. We see that in Acts, and in verse 34, it's just kind of funny. You know, you can see how the dynamics of this. You know, Jesus puts down the Sadducees. And the Pharisees, they all get together.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Sadducees. Now,
let's
see if we can get it. You know, almost as if to one up the Sadducees.
That's right. Yep. And what was interesting about it is what you see their silence there as they had gathered together. So, like you said, that's kind of an interesting thing. Here they thought they were scheming. Back to Luke chapter 20, verse 39. It says, "Then some of the scribes answered and said, 'Teacher, you have spoken well.'" So Luke takes it, you know, just a little bit further as far as what was said. Some were astonished. Some were saying, "Hey, you've spoken well." I think that's an interesting point. Well said. And then in verse 40, but after that, they dared not question him anymore. I think that's an interesting follow up. So think about that. I think they thought they would get him, and they thought they would trap him, and they came at different angles. They came with a variety of questions, and then here's this eloquent speech, eloquent answers, very pointed, and then there's this silence, you know, that we read about between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and then people are saying, "Wow, that was pretty good," and then no more questions. Why waste your time? What else are we going to do? Kind of embarrassing. Nothing more to ask, nothing more to say. And we're looking kind of silly, so we might as well just get quiet. So
if they were asking to actually be informed, if they're asking to find the actual answer,
they would have
kept going.
That's right. That's a good point. That's clearly not their gist. They were trying to trip him up, and once they realized they couldn't do that, there's nothing more to do. And it was just getting more and more embarrassing as time went on, and putting them in a tougher spot. But that's a great point, and I had not really given that a whole lot of thought. But if you're asking questions to truly understand, you will keep seeking. You'll keep asking more questions. There's never been any shame in asking questions. And Has Christ or any of his disciples ever shamed them for asking or wanting the knowledge? No, of course not. So this was definitely in a different vein. So, again, the reason I just kind of went through this, I think it's refreshing to see how the experts in the law, the leaders of the day, they had these tests for Christ. They had this whole line of thinking. They had these, if you will, tricks up their sleeves. And they wanted to open up a can of worms, and they wanted to kind of catch him, and they wanted to put him in a bad spot, and they couldn't do it. And that verse 40 is a great end cap, and that is, no one dared ask him another question. So that's a pretty good spot, you know, maybe to end that questioning piece. Down in Luke 20, if we stay there, Luke 20, let's read 45 through 47. Then in the hearing of all the people, he said to the disciples, "Beware of the scribes who desire to walk in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues, and the best places at feasts, who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater commendments." I'm sorry, greater condemnation. Jesus is warning his disciples in this text. And who else is the other audience here? Who else is listening? Verse 45 says, "Then in the hearing of all the people." So he's got the presence of many who are listening. So this isn't, yes, he's talking to his disciples. It'd be no different than me talking to this specific group here. But who all is listening? Everybody. And then from there, and so I'm going to transition away, and this is probably a good stopping point, but I'll give you where they're located so you can be reading about that. But so here we have the scribes, Pharisees, all these leaders of the day trying to trip him up, asking a bunch of questions. Who then asks him a bunch of questions following all these right before his death? It's his disciples. And the disciples ask questions for a totally different reason, and it's more for an understanding, not to try to trip him up. So I'll just give you these accounts to be looking at so you can read through those. Matthew chapter 24 and Mark chapter 13, and then in Luke chapter 21. But you can be reading those and be looking at the types of questions that the disciples are asking. All three of those accounts begin in, you know, very similar fashion. Maybe a little bit different wording, but you see the questions that they're asking. And it's kind of interesting. They start by asking about the adornment of a building. And so be reading about that and some of his response to that, and we'll get into that next week. We've got like 1 minute before I'll ring the bell. Does anybody have any thoughts about the questioning phase or anything that was going on here that to close this out? Oh, yeah.
Proud of the greetings of the God. And they, you know, were simply never going to admit, you know, any wrongdoing or misunderstanding on their part.
Sure.
Pride keeps a lot of people, including us, from accepting truth.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, maybe that's even a better point for us to consider is that if we find ourselves wrong in an area, especially when we're studying with others or having conversations, what should we do? You know, and instead of being too proud of just owning up to the mistake or whatever, which we know they were. I mean, they were very, very proud people, especially with what they had going on. Good comment. Any other comments? I'll ring the bell and then we'll take a break.